I'm your host, Lee W. Johnson, and welcome to my podcast, where I talk about all things related to magic, witchcraft, demonolatry, and a whole load of other related things. If you would like to find out more about me, get in touch with me, or hire me for a service, please go to my website, leewjohnson.com, or check out my link tree in the description of this podcast. Today I just want to have a bit of fun. Alright, so we're going to have a look at symbols. And we're going to begin with the pentagram. And through a progressive journey, we are going to get to a representation of the cosmos as a whole and a union of all things. Alright, so hopefully this is fun for everybody. And let's go for it. Okay, so as I said, we're going to start with the pentagram and we're going to progressively move through. Now, I would encourage people to take any symbol and play with it as much as you can. Find all representations you can, think of all interpretations that you could, and just play. Play is a very important thing, and as adults, we kind of forget to do it. So we've got to play, but I do encourage you to take one thing and go right down the rabbit hole and all of the sub rabbit holes that you find as you go down that one rabbit hole. So the pentagram. All right, so the pentagram, five pointed star, in its upright position. And the pentagram has got loads and loads and loads of different interpretations, representations. It's, you know, we can put the alchemical elements on it, which means that spirit goes to the top point. And in its upright position, it is often considered to be a representation or a image which represents the right-hand path, because spirit is moving up into the heavens. If we were to then invert the pentagram, or put it in its averse form, both horizontally and vertically. And there is a difference there. This was actually discussed in Lon Milo Duquette's book about Thelemic magic. Because in one of the rituals, Crowley doesn't say that the pentagram is inverted. He says it is an averse pentagram. And there was some debate around this. What is an averse pentagram? So if you were to take a pentagram as it is and you were just to flip it like that, you know, just basically take the point from the top and move it down to the bottom without spinning it or anything like that, that would be considered inverted. Whereas an averse can be, you can create an averse pentagram on two planes. One is horizontally, so you would take it from here and you would spin it that way. Or you can take it from here and spin it that way, which would become the inverted. But if you were to do it on both planes, what you're doing is, if you were to draw a pentagram on a piece of paper and then just spin it, turn it around 180 degrees, that becomes an averse pentagram. But that's not really the rabbit hole I want to go down here. So we have the upright pentagram, which is considered to be the right-hand path, spirit moving upwards. We have the inverted pentagram, which is often considered to be a representation of the left-hand path, where spirit is moving in downward into matter. Now, what happens if we take both of them? Because if you know me and you've been watching my videos, you know I don't like all this left-hand path and right-hand path and good and evil and black and white and all that crap. It needs to all come together in union, right? So what happens if we take both of them? So if we were to put the upright pentagram into a circle, this now becomes a pentacle, by the way. There does seem to still be some debate and argument around what is the pentagram and what is the pentacle, but pentagram is a five-pointed star. Pentacle is a five-pointed star inside a circle. Okay. Another rabbit hole I do not want to go down today. But if we were to put the pentagram into a circle, then we take that same thing, we copy it, and we spin it 180 degrees. We end up with a, without the circle now, we end up with a decagram. All right, that's another sub rabbit hole that you can go down if you want to, but not what I'm trying to get at today. Okay, so what we're going to do now is we are going to take the pentagram within the circle, and we are then going to divide the circumference of the circle into six equal parts. So we get 6 points around the circumference. Then we take the pentagram and we give it some perspective. So we move the 5 points of the pentagram onto 5 points of the circle. Okay, so now you can see it's got some perspective, it's got some bit of three dimension to it almost. Then we take that, we copy that, put it on top, and we turn that 180 degrees. And I think you'll see what we get. We get a hexagram. Okay, the hexagram is a representation of union with two opposing forces. So you'll see in the image, we have a red and a blue triangle because this is the union of two opposing forces, which are fire and water. We often consider this to be a union of man and God, and all these things, right? So now we've gone from the pentagram, which is a representation of five elements, but can be placed in such a way which represents a right-hand path, and placed in such a way which becomes a left-hand path. So we have these two opposing forces. If we put them together and we get the hexagram, then we have a union of these two paths. Okay? Still not at the end yet. Now, within this image of the double pentagram, which is forming the hexagram, we also get a cross. Okay, there is one line missing. So if we were to take a line from the top point to the bottom point, okay, then we have a witch's foot within the symbol. Okay, so we can take all the other stuff away, and we have a witch's foot, which has 6 points. So it's not now two triangles which are overlapping and coming closer together, and then well, two separate triangles that start coming closer together and start to overlap, which brings those opposing forces into union. We have a six-pointed figure, which is the witch's foot, and this actually becomes a seven-pointed figure because we have the center point. Now, this is where we start to get to the point where we can ascribe this to the witch's compass, to the representation of the cosmos, to all things, to all three worlds and all four cardinal directions. So we get into the mystery of 1734, which, if you don't know what 1734 is, go and have a look for Robert Cochrane and his letters, and specifically his letters to Joseph Barewalker Wilson, who Joe then went on to form the 1734 tradition. So, why is this 1734? Get to that in a minute. Okay, so we have the witch's foot, which has got 7 points. We've got 6 points on the outside and one in the center. Now, what we find here, because we're seeing this in a two-dimensional representation, what you need to do. And also, if you go back to where we had the two pentagrams overlaying and started to form the hexagram, and then we put the line in, all of that whole figure, if you go back there and you actually gaze at that for a period of time, what you can do is you can start to see a three-dimensional shape starting to form. And there's a whole load of magic wrapped up in that. But that's another sub-rabbit hole to go down. But you can go and have a look at that. What you what you'd be looking for mostly is two-dimensional figures which can be gazed at, and three-dimensional figures can come out of it. And it has to do with the shape, the acute angles, and the power that builds up within those acute angles, and then this whole pulling out of a three-dimensional figure. Okay, so that's another sub-rabbit hole. So we have the witch's foot, right? So we have it in a two-dimensional representation. Now what you want to do is you want to bring it into a three-dimensional representation. So what you have the vertical line. This is the axis mundi, the world tree. So you have the three worlds on the world tree. So that's the top point, the center point, which all the lines are going through, and the bottom point. So upper world, middle world, lower world, underworld. So that's the axis mundi. Then we have the cross lines. So what you want to do with those is pull those into a horizontal plane. Okay. And then you have four cardinal points. So this becomes your witch's compass. So this is where 1734, one of the interpretations of 1734 is one compass with 7 points, three on the axis, three worlds on the axis, and four winds on the cardinals. Okay. And this is the cosmos, is a representation of the cosmos. When you look at the witch's compass, each cardinal direction goes into a specific mythical land. You find various spirits in that direction. Usually in the northern hemisphere, you tie the north point to the North Pole star. If you're in the southern hemisphere, what you can do is switch that. There is the star called Polaris Australis, which is the opposite point of the North Pole star. But this all becomes very, very personal. So you have to go down that rabbit hole yourself. But what you've got is really a representation of the cosmos. You have your four cardinal directions, and you have Axis Mundi with the three worlds. And you can go from there and go absolutely crazy and play as much as you possibly want to and can. All right. So I just wanted to kind of play, just take one symbol and play with it and see where it can take us. And as I said, there's so many interpretations and representations that you can bring into just one symbol, the pentagram itself. So many different representations. I mean, you can take it into purely being Hygieia, the Greek goddess of health. And split up the name itself and put those on the points of the pentagram and relate those to the elements, the alchemical elements, and see how things flow as well. How one element flows into another one as you're following the lines around. So you can go crazy and just start playing. And this is only one. Symbols is only one. You can do it with numbers, you can do it with words, names, everything. So if you go into gematria, then you start creating numbers out of words, and words that have the same or equal the same number have a relationship with each other. So there's just so much you can play with in witchcraft and magic. It's just so much fun. But I think a lot of people miss out on this type of stuff. We kind of read things, and a person said it says it means this, and that's kind of what we stick with. We don't explore it further. If we take this image and this symbol and we combine it with this symbol, do we get anything? Is there any representation I can pull out of it which can lead to me understanding more of my own personal cosmos, cosmology, and things like that? So really, it's playing with things in witchcraft is just marvelous and fantastic. Anyway, so I think you get what I'm trying to get to with today's video. And I'll leave it there. and let you go down all the rabbit holes yourself. It's Wednesday, and therefore it's Ask Lee Day. All right, so if you have any questions, and I could do with some more questions. I think we've got 3 weeks left, and then I need more questions. So if you have questions, please leave them in the comments below. Anything to do with magic, witchcraft, demonology, whatever it is. And I'll have a look at it in this segment on these videos. And if you're listening on the podcast, then you can go to anchor.fm/LeeWJohnson and you can actually leave a voice note there with your question. All right, so let's get into a couple questions. Welcome to my channel. You are entering the world of magic and mysticism with your host, Lee W. Johnson. Keep the lights on and help improve the channel by becoming a supporter for just $2.99 per month. Hit the join button. Okay, so first question today, I'll just grab it here, is from Fatass Squirrel. Within the context of dreams, how can you tell if a dream about being attacked by a spirit is an actual spirit influencing your dreams or more a manifestation of anxiety or fear? This is actually a kind of a difficult question because it depends on your skill, your level of being able to dream. Dreaming is one of those things I've always battled with. So for somebody who it comes more naturally to or has gone through specific training and have gotten to that point where their dreaming is quite advanced, quite skillful, they can easily recognize a lucid dream, this becomes a lot easier. For anyone else, can be a bit more difficult because the difficulty comes in when you wake up. So you can be dreaming, and it may not just be a normal, you know, subconscious releasing of subconscious thoughts and fears and things like that. That type of dream, if we were to compare that to a dream, more of a what I'm going to call a lucid dream, probably the easiest way to separate those two or define those two. But what happens is you're in the dream. As soon as you wake up, your subconscious starts to fill in stuff. It starts to reinterpret symbolism. And the longer you leave that, the more the dream will start to kind of fade away, become less real. You know, you might halfway through the day, you might think back to the dream and think, was it that or was it that? Because the subconscious just remolds everything. So when you do wake up, you're going to have all of that stuff being changed, being filtered, being molded into something different. So this is why part of the training for lucid dreaming and dreaming itself is to immediately, as you wake up, jot down stuff in a notebook. And it doesn't need to be an exact story of what happened. You can jot down important aspects, important symbols within it, emotions, feelings that you have, impressions that you got. Just put down whatever it is, whatever comes to mind, just jot it all down. And then through that, over time and doing that, you start to it's almost like the subconscious kind of recognizes the act, and instead of filling in the blanks, it will allow a space of time to allow you to do this, because you are taking the symbolism straight from the dream and putting it directly into a written word, which you can then view and your subconscious cannot intercede. So, this is probably one of the best ways to help you with that practice of lucid dreaming. So how do you recognize the difference? It's going to depend on the intensity of the dream, the lucidity of the dream. You'll probably know that, you'll recognize that when you come out of certain dreams, they're fuzzy, they're fady. Other dreams will be so strong. You wake up and you have these intense emotions. Some of them you want to go back into, some of them you just want to run away from. But these intense emotions, and this is an indication of an extremely lucid dream. So we can use that as a gauge to figure out if it was an actual spirit that was in your dream, or whether it was your anxiety and fears which were creating that imagery. And this is the other thing, when you're in the dream, it could be completely different to what the interpretation of your subconscious gives it when you come out. So you may be running away from something in your dream, and then when you come out, in your dream itself, it could be an astral parasite. But when you come out, your subconscious could start filling stuff in and saying it was a demon, or it was a spirit, a fae, something that was trying to attack you, and quite possibly that could be the case. In the dream, it could have been some kind of learning experience that you needed, but coming out of the dream, subconscious start to fill things in, and it kind of interprets the whole thing as an attack. So the easiest way to determine the difference between the two would be to actually train yourself and get more proficient at lucid dreaming. It's that whole subconscious interpretation that happens when upon waking that changes everything within the dream. So we can't properly say whether it was one thing or the other, because the subconscious has just altered everything. So that's probably the best way to do it, is to actually train yourself in lucid dreaming, get more proficient at it, and then when you do wake up, there's less of that filtering, less of that reinterpretation that the subconscious does in that instance. So as I said, very difficult question to answer, because it depends on the person who is having the dream and having that experience, their level of proficiency in lucid dreaming itself, where they are at in that particular training, and how much the subconscious is actually reinterpreting and remolding everything from the dream into something which is more recognizable, something which the subconscious is more comfortable with. Very difficult to answer that question on a general basis anyway. All right, so let's get into the next question, which was from Love. Who do you work with? Or do you have a video of you explaining your deities and practice? Okay. I work with a lot of spirits, actually, and it depends on what's going on at the time. On a constant basis, I would have to say Hecate, Pan, and Lucifer. When we say work with, depends how we interpret that as well. Work with could be actively participating in a particular working to attain a particular goal. I suppose it would be the same thing, really. The other thing I was going to say was work with could be a long-term goal, your entire lifetime and beyond, to attain knowledge, to I don't want to say reach enlightenment, we do that all the time, but ascend even. I don't like this whole ascension descension thing. We expand, we become more aware, so that lifetime activity, that lifetime pursuit of the truth, there we go. So in that regard, in that lifetime pursuit of the deities and the spirits which are with me all that time, giving me knowledge, helping me with my practice of awareness, would be Hecate Pan and Lucifer. On a more immediate basis and time to time, I work a lot with the Goetia spirits. I've always found them to be amiable towards me. I've always found them to be there when I need them. When I've got a problem, when I need something quickly, when I need to increase something, create more abundance and things like that, then I immediately go to the Goetia spirits, really. Anyone's in particular, Marbas I work with for healing. Boon, I just love Boon. Boon's one of my absolute favorite spirits. Let's see. AIM I work with from time to time. If it's sex magic, I will often work with Sitri, just to increase the energy of the sex magic itself. And also moving forward, I'll probably work with some other of the Goetia spirits. But I do seem to focus a lot on the Goetia, which is why I'm doing Demon of the Week and focusing on the Goetia itself. I do work with other spirits, especially on a financial basis. Belphegor, Belial, Mammon. But those are definitely more long term. So I think we can actually split this into three periods of time, if we want to. Time's not real. But if we do extreme long term, so over a lifetime, would be Hecate, Pan, and Lucifer. Over a long period of time, it could be regarding my business, for instance, and that could span 10, 20 years. Then I would work with spirits like Mammon, Belphegor, Klawneck, even. Klawneck is more of an immediate spirit, bringing new things quickly. So let's stick with Mammon and Belphegor there. And Boon. Well, Boon comes from the Goetia. I'm just trying to remove my thoughts away from the Goetia and remember which other spirits I work with, or demons. So in that regard, that long-term business aspect would be Mammon and Belphegor. But then the more immediate stuff which is short term, maybe a month or two, or even a year, up to a year, I'd say, would be the Goetia spirits, the Djinn. I think that's it. And then, of course, we have other spirits which are not deities, which are not Djinn, which are not any of those things, spirit guides. My holy guardian angel. I mean, the one spirit that I work with the most on a permanent basis would be myself, and my holy guardian angel, or my divine self. But there's also spirit guides. When I do journey work, I have my fetch beast, and I also have particular spirit guides which help me along. I'm not going to say their names or anything like that, because that is personal, very personal. So I think, it depends on the work you're doing, depends on the work I'm doing, and it depends if it's a tangible thing as opposed to astral or spiritual thing. If it is journey work, there are particular spirits there. If it is trying to attain abundance, help with business, things like that, there are certain spirits there. If it's knowledge, attaining awareness, bringing yourself into union with divine self and things like that, there are spirits that I work with there. So there's a lot of different spirits that I work with. I think that gives you a kind of a good idea, though. All right, so that's this week's Ask Lee segment. And as I said, if you've got any questions, please leave them in the comments and I will add them to the list, which is starting to dwindle. Okay, so I'll see you next week. Have a good weekend and a week until then. Cheers for now. Bye bye. This podcast was brought to you by, well, myself, Lee W. Johnson. To find out more about me, please visit my website at leewjohnson.com or check out my link tree in the description of this podcast. If you like the video format, then subscribe to my YouTube channel. That's me for this week. Hope to hear from you soon. Thanks for listening.